to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. Come on, Dolphins fans. Time to fins up. Good morning, Miami Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily on this Wednesday, April the 1st. I am your host, Mike, and joining me on today's show is Tom Earnesty from right here at DolphinsTalk.com. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I just want to put a caveat out there to everybody listening. This is not an April Fool's joke that we're going to talk about today.
No, not at all, because this is very, very real. You know, on our podcast here for the past, I don't know, probably since the end of this year, you know, we have spoken about, you know, Justin Herbert, Tua, Jordan Love. We've gone over pros and cons of those guys. We talked about, you know, should Miami trade up to 3 to get one? If they stay at 5, should they take so-and-so at 5? If they don't take anybody at 5, can they get maybe a Herbert or a Love later in round 1? You know, we've gone over every possible situation and scenario except for one, which, you know, might actually happen or be on the radar, which is the Miami Dolphins trading up to number 1 overall and selecting Joe Burrow. And Armando Salguero, the Miami Herald, who we have had on this podcast in the past, you know, I say it when Armando talks and when Armando reports something, you know, perk up and listen, because he ain't just making stuff up and he ain't just saying stuff for the sake of saying stuff. When he reports stuff, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's true. So Armando, you know, Armando on Tuesday the 31st put out an article saying the Miami Dolphins want to move up to number 1 to select Joe Burrow. Now, he also said, I reported the same thing on March 9th, and nobody really flipped out over that. But as we get closer to the draft, you know, people are starting to pay attention more. So Armando's saying, you know, that the Miami Dolphins, you know, really like Joe Burrow, and, you know, they may trade up to number 1 overall to select him. Now, we have to talk about this because, you know, Joe Burrow could be the next starting quarterback of the Miami Dolphins, Tom.
He could be. I mean, we don't know how intense potential talks are, or even if they're happening at this
they
point.
They probably haven't started yet. Haven't started yet at all.
No. And I think one of the things that let's go back maybe about a week or so. And there was a cryptic message coming out of Bengals Twitter. I don't know if anybody else caught this, but I did. Bengals Twitter tweeted out an article, not an article, but a tweet. This is March 20th. Current mood: when you're holding a great new hand, but have to keep a straight face. Zip mouth emoji face, sunglass emoji face. Holding up a royal flush, and the ace of spades is the first pick in the draft. So take that at what you will. I think that as a cryptic as message as that is, that could tell you two things. Number one, the Bengals are very high and they love having the first pick. Or they have something in their possession, or they know something is coming, potentially maybe in a trade, that is going to, that they're going to make some serious money. Or they're going to bank on this, so to speak.
Because it shows that
it's a best hand in poker. And if they feel they have a great new hand, because they already had the first pick. So what's the great new hand?
It shows that they're open for business, really. It says, look, pick up the phone. We're open for business. That's what it's saying.
Essentially, that's what it's saying. I think you have to, again, you take everything at face value at this point. But if Armando Salguero is posting something, not once, but twice in a span of 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, you really have to start paying attention. The Dolphins really like Joe Burrow. That is no longer a question.
Can I say something right now, real quick?
Go right ahead.
It's a question. Because it's one I don't know the answer to. You don't know the answer to. Do they really like Joe Burrow, or do they not love Tua, Herbert, and Love, and they think Joe Burrow is the safest option?
I think that could go
either way.
It can go either way, but here's what I'm thinking. If the Dolphins trade up to one, they know they're taking Joe Burrow. If the draft plays out potentially the way that and Joe Burrow is taken by the Bengals, and they're going to get the Dolphins sitting at five with the option of Tua, Herbert, I think those are really the two at five you got to look at. How, from a media perspective, we understand the injuries with Tua. We understand some of the flaws with Herbert. But Tua, at this point, seems like he's the better prospect when healthy. If the Dolphins take Herbert over Tua, how massacred are they going to be in 5 years if Herbert could be potentially gone and Tua is leading whatever team to the playoffs in consecutive seasons, or however it plays out? He stays healthy. He's the better quarterback. How massacred is this team going to look?
Yeah.
I think trading up one gives you the opportunity to not have that problem.
Yeah, and I think fans think more that way than GMs when it comes to either Herbert or Tua. I think it's like that's more of a fan mindset than an actual general manager mindset. I think a general manager mindset is they can't worry about in 5 years if the fans, you know what I mean? That might be more of a fan mindset. When it comes down to this, though, I mean, like when I had on from the Sun Sentinel on yesterday's podcast, Dave Hyde, when he spoke to three former NFL general managers, you know, they weren't in love with pretty much any of these guys in this draft. And honestly, it would be the Miami Dolphins' luck that the year they got all these picks in round one and all these picks in round two, where they're loaded up on six of the first 70 picks. It's like that's the year that it's a weak draft for quarterbacks. There's not a sure thing out there at quarterback. It would be the Miami Dolphins' luck. I think when it comes to possibly trading up for Joe Burrow, it does come down to we have all these picks. We know we can't make all these picks, so we have to trade a few off anyways. And you might as well get the guy who's number one on your board. I honestly think that's all it might be, is Joe Burrow's number one on our board at quarterback. The cost to trade off, which we'll talk about here in a second, isn't unreasonable. Yes, it's going to be – you're going to have to part with some picks. No doubt about it. And, you'll probably have to part with a pick in 2021 as well in round one or two. You have to part with some picks, but they got the picks to part with. So that's why you made the Laremy Tunsil trade. That's why you made the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade, to put yourself in a situation like this, in a position like that. So if they can reasonably move up from 5 to 1 to get the number one quarterback on their board, like we've been saying, if they have conviction in a kid and they go, he's number one on our board for a reason, otherwise he wouldn't be number one, you make the move. Now, you know, as a fan, you have to separate that. You might not like the move. You might want to hold on to, you know, as many picks as you can in rounds one and two and in 2021. I get that logic too. But as we always say on this show, Tom, you know, if you don't have a quarterback, or if you don't have one that you love as a franchise or that you trust as a franchise, then you're just spinning your wheels in the mud and you're really going nowhere fast. Now, who knows if Joe Burrow's the answer? I don't. I'm not the biggest fan of his, I will admit. He did grow on me a little over the course of the 2019 college football year. I'm still not the biggest fan of his, and we'll go over his pros and cons and all that stuff. But if Chris Greer and all the people around him feel, you know, he's the guy, then, you know, I'm willing to go along for the ride to at least say he's the guy.
I agree.
Yeah.
You have so, to. You have – if, and we've been saying it. If there's conviction on one, do what you have to do to get them. You do not settle. If they're not number one on your board, you do not settle. You find a way to make the deal. Now, you mentioned, what does a deal potentially look like? You know, honestly, it's four spots to move up. I don't think anybody really has the ammunition. Nobody has the ammunition that Miami does to move up a draft board. Especially if you try to move to number one.
Raiders do, but I don't think Cincinnati wants to move down to 12. That's the problem.
Oh, so the Raiders lose their quarterback prospect. They lose any shot at a quarterback. So I doubt that's on their mind. I think that they're going to be focused with the Dolphins to make that move. So a potential package I see, obviously, is just flip the one. Okay, you flip the one and the five. So the Bengals would get five. Now, people think some people are saying, well, you're giving up a first. No, essentially you're swapping a first because you still have the first, right?
Yep.
So 1 to 5. So you give the Bengals the fifth pick. You have to put in 18 based on value. Bengals are going to want 18. And I think you can get away with throwing in a second round pick next year. And this whole thing is done.
I think you're on the right path. I think it's going to be a little more costly. And look, I've heard every whacked out crazy scenario today when this happened. I was even listening to the Pat McAfee show, which FYI, for pure entertainment, Pat McAfee, how he's not one of the people on Monday Night Football as they're always trying to find an answer for the Monday Night Football booth. He works for ESPN. He's under their nose. Put this man on Monday Night Football. He's the most entertaining son of a gun that's out there today. But Pat McAfee was talking to AJ Hawk on the show today. And, you know, AJ Hawk, I'm sure he's a nice man, but he might have taken one too many hits to the head. AJ Hawk thought, and he thinks, that the Miami Dolphins have to part with all six picks of the first 70 in round one to jump from 5 to 1. And, you know, and I've heard every, you know, look, we say, well, that's a joke. That's crazy. Nobody has to part with that much. But I've heard every combination in between, whether it's on Facebook, Twitter, this, that. Here's what I think. Yes, 5, like you said. Probably 18. That makes sense. Now, I think they got to part with another pick this year, whether that's
56.
56 or 39. Let's just say 56. And then I'm thinking they got to part with a first next year. I just think they do. I think that's when Cincinnati will say, now we're talking. Now, let's say Houston's first next year. It doesn't matter which one it is next year because Houston may suck. Miami may suck. We have no earthly idea. So we'll just say Houston, their first-round pick for argument's sake. So Miami's got to part with 5-18, 56, and Houston's one next year. What does that leave Miami with? Well, that leaves you with pick number 1, 26, 39, and 70. That gives you 4 picks in the first 3 rounds, 2 in round 1. If I'm the Miami Dolphins, I make that move. Now, look, this trade, we're doing this very simplistically right here. You could have Cincinnati throw in their 4th and Miami throws in like one of their 5ths. That might be stuff thrown in at the end to sort of sweeten the pot a little bit. But overall, Miami's going to have to part with, you know, 5, either 18 or 26 this year. I would say probably 18.
Yeah.
And then, you know, probably another pick this year because Cincinnati's going to want, you know, they're going to want, look, Cincinnati's holding the cards for a reason. So you're going to have to, you know, make it worth their time because you have to look at this from Cincinnati's perspective. They're an Ohio team that stunk forever, and they have a quarterback from Ohio who's the consensus number one overall pick fall in their lap. If they pass on him, that fan base might revolt. They might revolt, which I don't blame them. I would too. Because like I said on this podcast about a week ago, if you're the Miami Dolphins who have been looking for a quarterback pretty much since Marino retired on March 13, 2000, and you pick a number one in the draft, and the top quarterback prospect in the draft is from Miami Gardens, and you don't take them, you know, our fan base would revolt. I mean, just so you have to look at it from Cincinnati's perspective, they have to get enough to where their fan base is like, well, okay, that makes sense. So I'm thinking 5, 18, 56, and probably Houston's one next year. That's your probably starting off point. That might be enough to get it done, but that's what you're looking at. That's what you're looking at. Which, again, it leaves Miami next year with 1 first-round pick and 2 second-round picks. You're still in for Miami. You get the quarterback that you want, and you still are in good shape with extra picks. Yep. So I don't think it's unreasonable. But, you know, it's really up to Cincinnati at the end of the day. It's up to Cincinnati. And, you know, look, and something else to remember. As we are right now, most of America is under house arrest these days with the wild things happening in the news. I would not be shocked if these two teams, you know, I don't think they'll probably want to announce a trade to the week of the draft because what's the rush? There's no rush. If you're Cincinnati, you're in no rush because you're hoping somebody else comes in with an offer that's even way better than this. I don't know who, but you're going to wait till the last minute just to make sure nobody comes in with a better offer. I would not be shocked if they do come to terms on a trade. and they want to announce it the Monday prior to the draft, if the league goes, you know what, this draft is going to have all of America watching this thing because nobody can leave their freaking house. We're not going to announce this to the night of the draft till Cincinnati on the clock just to have that wow moment. That wow moment. Oh, my God. Cincinnati traded the pick. Because most of the time when you look at when Washington traded up to number two for RG3, that happened months prior. When you look at Wentz, when they traded up Philadelphia to number two with Cleveland, that happened like well over a month prior. When you look at what the Jets did a couple years ago to move up to pick number three, that happened a month prior. If these two teams can work out a deal, but those are normal years with normal drafts in a normal world. This year, just because of what's going on in the world, you know, and it's going to be an odd draft with no fans. There's not going to be much juice. I would not be shocked if the league tells each one of these teams, you got your trade. It's all approved. Let's not announce this tonight, one of the draft. Just so we got that wow moment. Night one of the draft, pick number one, boom, Cincinnati, you made a trade. That would not shock me either. So we might not even see this announced till night one of the draft because, you know, the league's going to want to, you know, spice up this draft somehow, some way. And how do you spice it up somehow, some way? Cincinnati, you're on the clock. And then, boom, all of a sudden there's a trade. That would, you know, get everyone's attention real quick. So just something to keep in mind because there's really no rush to make any trade announcement, especially this year with everything happening in the world.
Yeah, save it for draft night. Save the wow factor, like you said. It drives up ratings. You know, you build up rumors. You say the Dolphins and Bengals are talking. They're talking. They're talking.
Especially this year with no fans there. And it's all going to be live streamed. They're going to be, I mean, this is going to be an odd draft, not one that we are used to seeing. And, you know, to sort of get some juice is like you open up the draft with a mega trade. So if there is a trade to be made, it might not be announced in advance. It might be when Cincinnati's actually on the clock night one.
Yeah, and, you know, this may help. You know, this year, even though it stinks that, you know, there's not going to be any fans or anything really a part of it outside of just being online, but one big thing here is the tipping of picks. We may see a lot less of that this year being that nobody's going to be there. No beat writers, no nothing. So
that's true.
Everything may be a big surprise in this draft. There's not going to be much in regards to tipping of picks.
Yeah, because I know with most teams, on the night of the draft, they invite the media to their facility, and they're all in a room, and right after the pick, you know, one, right when the pick is made, they get tipped off right there. And then right after the pick, usually the general manager or the head coach will come out, talk to the media for 5 minutes, and go right back in the draft room. That's not going to happen this year because all the facilities are closed, and they're not going to be open by late April. So there might – I mean, look, I'm sure there's going to be someone on social media who's getting picks tipped like 5 seconds before the actual announcement. So if you want to see the spoiler before it's on TV, there's going to be one or two people who are going to be online doing that. But it won't be as rampant as in years past. I think you're 100% right.
Yeah, and the other piece, too, is that a lot of people are going to be wanting to live stream their reactions this year because no one's at the draft. So I know that you know, Ian's putting together like a Zoom call with all the Dolphins fans.
Yeah.
If they wanted to be on it, it's going to be, I think he's already got like 100 something people already doing it. So
he's got 100 something people in. I think he's got a few ex players to sign up as well, which is nice. But let's see who actually shows up for that though on that night. It's easy to say, sure, I'll sign up now. Let's see who actually shows up on that night though. Because I think fans of the Dolphins are going to be on it. I think, look, to me, look, I like the draft. Don't get me wrong. I like the draft. But at the end of the day, it's just reading a name off an index card. So as much as I like it, I don't get crazy about it. But I know some people really get into it, and they are, you know, they start sweating, they start shaking. Oh my God, what's my gonna do? Relax, and just read a name off an index card. But yeah, it should be interesting to see fans of the Dolphins and how they react with whatever Miami does. Look, when the Miami Dolphins traded up for Deion Jordan, you know, the fan base was going crazy. People were crying at the stadium. Yeah, we got Deion Jordan. It didn't work out. So it's like, if they trade up to number one, I would expect it to be a very similar situation where the fan base is very, very happy, I would think.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I would be perfectly fine. I've, like you, I wasn't a huge fan of Burrow, and we'll talk about, you know, the pros and cons here in a sec. But, you know, he had such a tremendous year, and it's hard to ignore what he brings to the table. But, you know, we'll see what happens. If it doesn't happen, then it's, you know, now it's the pacing game. If the Dolphins trade up to one, you know it's going to happen. But if they're sitting at five and don't make any moves up and two quarterbacks are sitting there, oh, boy. The amount of pacing and the hair pulling, and I mean, Dolphins Twitter is going to be insane on draft night. That's for a fact. That's without question. And I'll be live streaming Mike and I'll be live streaming my reaction while we're actually probably on our show or recording the bit while the picks happen live. So it's going to be a very interesting night, and I can't wait for it to happen.
Yeah. So let's talk about Joe Burrow a little more. And, you know, the knock he gets, which I think it's a fair one, is, you know, he's a one-year wonder. Which, if you look, you know, his freshman year at Ohio State, he did not play in one game. His sophomore year at Ohio State, his freshman year, he was redshirted. So that should be fair. In 2015. 2016 is his real freshman year. He played in five games, 22 of 28, two touchdowns. All that was in total garbage time. Cannot read anything into that. Sophomore year at Ohio State, played in five games, 7 of 11. Again, garbage time. Cannot read into that. That's when he transferred to LSU. And his junior and senior years at LSU, when he was the number one guy, the starter, that's what you have to look at. So as a junior, 13 games, 57.8 completion percentage, 2,894 yards, 16 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. So touchdown to interception rate's good. Only 5 interceptions in 13 games. You can live with that. One thing you have to know, though, is LSU in 2018 was still not a wide-open offense. They were still a very conservative offense. They weren't a team that would, you know, was known for throwing it around much. Now, in 2019, yes, they were. In 2018, it was still pretty much a run-first team for the most part. But, you know, Joe Burrow played well. I'm not going to say he was spectacular because he wasn't, but he didn't play badly. He was just a run-of-the-mill college quarterback. Good enough, but nobody that made you stand up and take attention. Now, clearly his senior year, you stood up and took attention. 60 touchdowns. 6 interceptions. You can't, I mean, that's a stat line, you know, you cut off your left arm for. 60 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 76.3 completion percentage, 5,671 yards. I mean, that's a Heisman Trophy, once in a lifetime, greatest single season by any quarterback type year. The problem is, as we saw in that Dave Hyde article in the Sun Sentinel, when you talk to 3 former NFL GMs, that year's so good, it makes you worried. Is that the outlier? And was his junior year the real guy? Or was it, did he finally have everything click in 2019? I don't know. Nobody knows. But that's why there's a little bit of a red flag around him, in that he had that one monster year. Is that the outlier, or is that the new norm? And nobody knows. So I get it why people are a little bit nervous when it comes to Joe Burrow. But that year was so good. You know, and the funny thing is, which we hear this so much, and it drives me nuts, and I know I've said it a million times, you know, when people talk about, when they talk about Tua, they say, well, he goes to Alabama. He's surrounded by so much top-flight talent. Anybody can play quarterback there, which I always laugh at. Like, the quarterback at Oklahoma has no talent around him, or the quarterback at Ohio State's got no talent around him, or the quarterback at Clemson's got no talent around him. LSU has more offensive talent this year than probably Alabama did. If not, it's close. It's 1-1A. Joe Burrow was surrounded by so much elite-level talent, but he doesn't get that knock, but somebody like Tua does, which just shows how, you know, some fans can't hide their bias. But when you talk about any of these quarterbacks, whether it's Lawrence next year or Justin Fields next year, or whether it was Haskins last year, Joe Burrow, Tua, You know, they're all surrounded by elite-level talent, and you can't use that to knock one of these players. They all have top-level talent. In college football, you know, you got your 5 to 8 power teams, power schools, and, you know, they have superstars at all their wide receiver spots, at the tight end spots, at the running back spots. So Joe Burrow in 2019, you know, Justin Jefferson, he had the running back who's going to go high in this draft probably in the first three rounds. I mean, he had big-time talent. He had Moss over at tight end who is going to get picked in this draft. You know, he had big-time talent around him, but we're not going to hold it against him because all these kids had even Justin Herbert had big-time talent around him. They all had big-time talent around him. But Joe Burrow had a big senior year, and, you know, he vaulted himself, you know, to the number one pick of this draft. So looking at the numbers, you know, especially off of 2019, he's earned to be the number one pick based off that year he had, including two big games in the playoffs where they won the national championship.
Yeah, and like you said, you have to look at the whole body of work. And when I look at Joe Burrow and I watch him, you have to always talk about 2018. And I watched him in 2018, just like, you know, just like anybody else. The SEC is on every Saturday, big primetime games, big matchups, front and center, national spotlight. And you see Joe Burrow in 2018, and you're like, I don't understand what the big deal was with this kid. I really didn't see anything elite. One thing that did change was Joe Brady. That was the biggest change for Joe Burrow. He came in, it was the passing game coordinator, essentially, you know, he ran the offense. And Burrow goes from a 57.8% completion percentage to 76.3%. And when you go like that, oh, you know, that could just be because he was, you know, he was getting the ball out quick. He was No. His yards per attempt went from 7.6 to 10.8 in 1 year. So it wasn't that he was just getting the ball out quick, throwing screen passes, building up that stat sheet. He was throwing the ball down the football field. And he did a great job. And a lot of that has to go with the coaching that he received from 2018 to 2019 was completely night and day. So what they found, or what Joe Brady found with Joe Burrow, was untapped potential. And he unleashed it last year. He threw the ball 148 times more than he did in 2018, and he completed 183 more passes. Completed 183 more passes year over year. So he threw the ball more. He was more accurate with the ball. The offense fit, and what fits Joe Burrow is a spread-style offense. And, Mike, what does the Miami Dolphins going to be running under Chan Gailey?
They're going to be wide open spread style offense.
So you could say that the offense and the way that Joe Burrow plays in that offense will fit the Miami Dolphins.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And looking over the NFL.com draft profile for Joe Burrow, let's go over some of the strengths and weaknesses they got. Lance Zierlein, who's a very good draft analyst. He does this stuff for NFL.com, puts up the strengths and profile. He puts up the strengths and weaknesses. First off, for the player comparison, most people have compared him to Romo, which when you watch him play, he does look like a mini Tony Romo. Now, Lance Zierlein here on NFL.com has him compared to Kurt Warner, which I can sort of see that too in Warner, in that he just distributes the ball and gets the ball in the right spot to let his playmakers make the play. So whether it's Romo or Warner, I can see both, but those are the guys he normally gets compared to. When you look at some of the strengths, and I'm just going to read off, I mean, there's a ton here and there's a ton of weaknesses. I'll just go over a few of the strengths. Off the charts, football IQ and intangibles, which is 100% true because he is the son of a coach and he comes from a football family where everyone in his family was either a football coach or a football player. Plays with plays with a great field presence and poise, rapid ascension to chess master who can beat up coverages thrown at him, meaning, you know, he can read a defense. He knows what he's looking at. So if you're going to try to hide a coverage or hide a scheme, he can read, recognize, and adjust prior to the ball being snapped. He goes through his progressions with fluidity. He threw some passes into impossible windows on several occasions. Very good timing and anticipation. Throws pass catchers away from coverage and into space. That's a big thing in the NFL, is, you know, throwing your wide receivers open, even when they're not open. That's a big thing. So he has above average toughness in the pocket, and as a runner, he can move a little and he can take a hit. So those are some of the strengths. Now, I know you're probably hearing those strengths. Oh, man, this guy's the real deal. How can you pass him? Well, let's go to some of the weaknesses here. Some of the weaknesses. Number one, he needs to be in the right scheme. If you put Joe Burrow in the wrong scheme, you know, he's going to be just a guy. He's got to be in the right scheme or else it ain't going to work. Two, like we've been saying, since 2018 to 2019, two different people. 2018, he's just a guy. Put it this way. In 2018, Joe Burrow looked like Jay Fiedler. In 2019, Joe Burrow looked like Dan Marino 1984. So it's like night and day. Night and day. Arm strength is a big issue. And that's the one that probably worries me the most as a fan of the Dolphins. Because, you know, the arm strength, it's not great with Joe Burrow. And when you are in the AFC East and you are in Miami, what do you need to do to win in the playoffs and to win the AFC East? That you're going to have to, you know, most years, go on the road late in the year to Foxborough, New York City, or Western New York to play the Bills in December, cold, windy, and you're going to have arm strength to cut the wind. And you're going to have to be able to throw the ball where you can cut the wind. And if you have a below average arm, that makes me nervous. That's the one red flag with him that really makes me nervous, because, you know, to win the AFC East, and then if you go to the playoffs, you might have a playoff game in Baltimore, in Kansas City, where guess what? It's going to be windy. It's going to be cold. And arm strength is a big factor there. So the arm strength is a big issue. It's a big issue, and it's not the greatest arm strength out there. It's not Justin Herbert arm strength. Justin Herbert can throw a ball through a concrete wall. He's got that type of arm strength. He will, if he threw a ball against a concrete wall, the wall's going to say, ouch, okay? That's the kind of arm strength he's got. Joe Burrow, that ain't going to happen. His release is average at best. So there are weaknesses. What else here? His accuracy, steep drop in accuracy on intermediate throws outside the numbers. So those big NFL throws, they always say, the big boy throws, where you stand in the pocket and you throw the ball outside the numbers, his accuracy is not great. So really it comes down to mainly one-year wonder and arm strength. But there are negatives here with Joe Burrow. Again, though, there's a lot of positives too. And he's a number one quarterback on pretty much every team's board for a reason. And you can look at this like, well, every team can't be wrong. Yeah, you're probably right. Every team can't be wrong.
I'm not as concerned about his arm strength as some may see. I think just because he doesn't have, you know, a rocket arm doesn't mean he can't make all the throws. Chad Pennington had a noodle arm, and the guy could make all the throws. Jay Feeler had a noodle arm. He could make pretty much all the throws. The big thing with Joe Burrow is making sure that he can step into the pocket and be able to use his technique to be able to drive the football. So it's about having, you know, have good protection, and Joe Burrow has very, very good pocket presence, and you saw that in 2019 especially. He can move in the pocket. He senses the pressure. He can move. He can scramble if he needs to, and he can throw on the run. Now, he's not as accurate throwing on the run as many may think. Like a Tua, for instance, he's very accurate throwing on the run. But Burrow's arm strength doesn't concern me, especially in the style of offense that the Dolphins you saw last year and the offense they're going to run this year. Not a lot of passes typically go outside those numbers. They're going to be playing more inside the lines which is why I think Albert Wilson's still on the roster, because they want someone to be able to be able to take the take the middle of the field and break down a defense, because the ball's going to get out of his hands quick. Spread offense doesn't mean he's going to hold the ball for 5 seconds and try to throw the ball 50 yards down the field. He's going to try to get it out. Those in routes, the slants, all those are going to play a big role in this offense for Chan Gailey and Joe Burrow, all those throws. I agree with you when it comes to December time and you're playing a game in Western New York for the division title against the Bills potentially, and the wind's blowing at 40 miles an hour in that stadium. You have to make the throws, but the one thing that the Dolphins want to do and Brian Flores wants to do is run the ball. So you can hide some flaws if you can. So in those games, they have to be able to run the football, not just rely on the passing game. So we're going to see a lot of things happen, but if Joe Burrow, if the Dolphins end up trading up to one and they select Joe Burrow, I'm 100% on board, because there are a lot more pros than there are cons when it comes to Joe Burrow.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and the same goes for Tua. There's more pros than cons. Obviously, the biggest con is the health.
One of the cons I failed to mention, because I always laugh when this is used as a con. Are you worried that Joe Burrow only has 9 in chance?
No.
Oh, because, at the combine, when he got measured and there were only 9 in chance, you know, some people were up in arms, because they say to be an NFL quarterback, you got to be at 9 3/4 or 10 inches. Anyone with 9 in chance, you know, every inch matters, as they say, or some females say, every inch matters. And, 9 inch hands is too small. You're going to drop the ball too much. So I remember at the combine, he had those 9-inch hands when they were measured. And some people were just up in arms over flipping out, which, tell me, what was the hand size of Dan Marino? What was the hand size of Joe Montana? I don't even know if they even measured that stuff back in the 80s and stuff. But at the combine, that was one of the red flags with him. He only had 9-inch hands, which always makes me laugh when you start talking about hand size and stuff like that.
We move on, I just have to say this. If you played quarterback growing up, I did. I played quarterback for a couple of years, reserve role quarterback, whatever. The one thing that they teach you as a young kid is when you're standing back there, your hand is up to your ear, ready to throw, and your other hand's not too far. So if you feel pressure, and I got hit a lot playing quarterback because I played behind a bad line, your hand immediately goes to the football if you feel pressure or you get hit. It's an instinct. It happens. So losing the football is not prominent unless someone's coming up from behind you, which happens to everybody. If someone's coming behind you, they can hit your hand, hit your arm, and the ball come loose. Oh, well, that has nothing to do with the hand.
Tom Earnessy was the Don Strock of Western New York, folks. I'm telling you right now. Tom Earnessy, as a young lad, was the Don Strock of Monroe County, Western New York. So, look, I don't just have anybody on this podcast. We have on legends.
I'm a legend in my own head, okay?
That's right. That's right. As we wrap up here, let's play the game I always like to play. And what would you rather have, Tom? I'm going to have to be creative with this one. Let's do the trade I did to the 5-18-56 in Houston's first next year. Would you rather do that? Or would you rather sit at 5 and take Tua?
I'm still in the camp of not moving the capital, but I'm also in the camp of if they feel that Burrow's the guy and Tua's not, then yeah, go trade the picks.
Would you rather do that trade, 5-18-56 Houston's 1, for Joe Burrow, or would you rather take pick number 5, trade down a few spots, get more picks for 2021, and select Jordan Love?
No, I would take Burrow.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to do that game with this one, because if they're trading up to 1, then they pretty much have the guy they want. So, but yeah, I mean, look, again, we don't know. and we're going off their Mito Salguero report, but it was worth talking about on today's show because we really have talked about Herbert a lot. We've talked about Tua a lot. We've talked about Jordan Love some, but we really haven't talked about Joe Burrow. And look, because I, on some level, I'm not even sure if this will happen. I'm not sure. I mean, look, I'm sure the Miami Dolphins want to trap to number one. I'm just not sure how open Cincinnati is to moving off number one. Now, we've heard the reports, you know, pretty much since the Senior Bowl where the Cincinnati Bengals had the opportunity to coach Justin Herbert, that they fell in love with Justin Herbert at the Senior Bowl because he was the best player on the field. He was the MVP of the Senior Bowl. He was spectacular at the Senior Bowl, and he checked every box for him at the Senior Bowl. So we've heard that rumor that Cincinnati is in love with Justin Herbert. But, you know, they're not going to take him at one because why would you when you can slide back a few spots and still get Justin Herbert and still get a mountain of picks? So, you know, if Cincinnati is open to a trade, that's why. Because if Cincinnati's, if they trade down, they're not going to trade down to select Tua. They're trading down to select Justin Herbert, which means if you're the Chargers, you know, this would just pretty much, look, if, I don't know what the Chargers want, but if their goal is to select Tua, you know, they're going to be able to sit there at six and he's going to fall in their lap, which is probably something they never thought would happen. Now, if the Chargers want Herbert, they're probably going to be scrambling to try to put together a package here to get ahead of Cincinnati. And Cincinnati, once they trade to five, knows they might still have to trade up to 4 or 3 to get the guy they want. So it might be a lot of moving around here should Miami move up to one. Cincinnati might not be able to stay at five and get the guy they want. They might have to move up to 4 or 3 to get the guy they want, but they're going to have a mountain of picks to make any trade they want. So, look, who knows? But I wanted to do a show today about this because we really haven't talked a lot, if at all, about Joe Burrow. And I know friend of the podcast, Orlando Elzagheri, you know, for weeks on his radio show and on social media saying, don't even waste your time talking about this. There's no way Cincinnati's going to trade the pick. And he may be right. He may be right when it's all said and done. And I've sort of been in that boat with the Big O, that there's no way Cincinnati's going to trade the pick, so why even waste your time? But as we always say, where there's smoke, there's fire. And there might start to be like some smoke here. And we all, and plus we knew Joe Burrow, you know, he for all those weeks around Super Bowl week, he didn't come out and say, you know, I want to play for Cincinnati. Joe Burrow has since said, I'll play for whoever picks me. That's a whole different thing than saying, I want to play for Cincinnati because they're holding number one pick. Joe Burrow has never come out and openly said, you know, I want to go number one. I want to be a Cincinnati Bengal. I love the Bengals. Joe Burrow has just said, I'll play for whoever picks me, which are two very different things. Usually, everybody wants to be the number one pick in the draft. It means the most money, the most fame, the most endorsements. Joe Burrow hasn't really embraced that. He's pretty much said, whoever picks me, I'll be happy to play for him. And if it's the Bengals, great, it's the Bengals. But if it's not, I mean, so if Cincinnati knows they got a guy who's not going to be, you know, happy as all heck to be there, and they can get a bunch of picks and select the guy that they loved at the Senior Bowl, you know, he's starting to put together the pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, and I will leave off with this, Mike. There was an old saying back in the 80s, big saying, very popular, had a real catchy laugh to it. Everybody has a price. Everybody's got a price.
Yeah. Well, Ted DiBiase was just arrested like a week and a half ago, so he might have a price in jail because I don't think he's ever going to see the light of day again. But, it's true. Everyone's got a price. And if you're the Dolphins, that's what Chris Greer and company's weighing out. You know, how much is too much to trade up? And if they can come to terms on a deal, I think the deal we came up with is probably the jumping off point of what is a realistic deal. Miami would still have two picks in round one this year. They'd probably still be able to hold to the round, at least one of their picks in round two. We have them holding on to pick number 39. If Cincinnati push back and say, we like to trade, but we want 39 instead of 56, Miami'd have to cave. You're not going to let, you know, 20 spots, you know, not let you get the guy you want, a quarterback. But if you're Miami, you probably open up with pick 56. And again, if it's that, and then all of a sudden Cincinnati throws in their pick in round four and Miami has to throw in some picks in round five, so Miami gets a little something else of an edge later in the draft, I could see that happening too. But I think that jumping off point of 5, 18, 56, and a first rounder next year, I think that's fair. I mean, if Cincinnati wants more than that, I tell them to go pound salt, because at a certain point it just becomes too much. But I think that's not too much right there, because it leaves you in a good spot for this year's draft and leaves you in a good spot for next year's draft in 2021. And, you know, so be it.
I agree. You know, do what you got to do to get the guy you want.
Yep, and that's what it's all about at the quarterback spot. Get the guy you want. And if Joe Burrow comes to Miami, you know, you look at that offense. Yes, they have to fix the offensive line, which I'm sure they would probably address later in round one. They have to get a running back. That would obviously be addressed probably in rounds two or three. But with Parker, Preston Williams, Hearns, Wilson, Grant, Joe Burrow, whoever they take at running back, you know, you're starting to put together an offense now. Not a finished product. Still a lot of work to be done on the offensive line. Even at wide receiver, you might say, you know, I'm not in love with someone like Hearns. And you got Williams. He's coming back from a major knee injury. So, you know, still probably a need for another wide receiver, but maybe not this year. Maybe in 2021 that's a need. But you're starting to put together an offense to where, you know, you can feel the competitive team, you would think, where, okay, I can see where this is going. I see the light at the end of the tunnel. If they draft a left tackle this year, then, you know, left tackle, left guard, center, you're probably looking okay. Jesse Davis at right guard or right tackle. Hey, you know what? This offensive line isn't awful. Maybe we're just missing one guy away. Maybe we're one guy away from sort of putting the finishing touches on this offensive line. And maybe we're one more wide receiver away. And maybe we're one more tight end away just for depth. Okay, you can sort of see where they're going. And we'll see, because the draft will be here before we know it. We are in April, Tom. It doesn't seem like April Fool's Day this year, because the joke started probably about a month ago where we're all under house arrest. But we are in April, and the draft will be here before we know it.
I'm excited for it. I think when we look at what's going on in the world, the NFL is still holding the draft. I think it's great, because they'll figure out the logistics. But for fans, for people of this country who, you know, watch, I mean, 100 million households watch the Super Bowl a year. The draft is going to a break from reality. Even if it's 3 hours worth of time, it's a break from reality. Number two, it's sports. We don't have any right now. So having something to talk about and something to enjoy, again, a break from reality, and you don't have the other stuff on your mind for that time frame. So I think it's going to be good, especially for the NFL fans, for the Dolphins fans in general too. It's going to be a great night. It's going to be a crazy night. We're all going to agree to disagree on a lot of what will happen, who the pick's going to be, what's going to happen. We all need a break from reality, and for God's sakes, stay home, wash your hands, and just be safe. Don't go out. Don't hang out in public. Just do what you got to do. But
wash your hands. Pretty much wash your hands and don't touch your face. Those are the only two rules you got. Well, three. Don't leave your house. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Don't leave your home. And we will get past this. That's pretty much the only rules right now in the world. If you can follow those three simple rules, we will get past this quicker, because it's going to take each and every one of us to do those three things, and we can beat this. One other tidbit of NFL news that was announced on Tuesday. The NFL usually releases their schedule a week prior to the NFL draft. Not this year, for obvious reasons, because they're putting in contingency plans should the league not be able to play 16 games. The NFL schedule will be released in or around May 9th. So maybe it's the 8th, 7th, maybe it's the 10th or 11th. In or around May 9th is the plan to release the NFL schedule. Now, they're saying it has nothing to do with what is happening in the world. They're lying to you. It has everything to do with what's happening in the world, because the NFL, you know, as of right now, they're saying the plan is to play 16 games, a full season. Maybe things get pushed back by a week or two, but that's the plan. But they know as well as everyone else plans change, and they have to make a contingency plan to whether if the league gets pushed back to 12 games, if the season gets pushed back to 14 games, and they have to factor that into the schedule, and they have to make it fair to all teams. So that's why the schedule is being pushed back by a month this year, because they have to build that into each team's schedule to where, okay, if for something were to happen again in the fall and this pops back up, the virus, and we have to lose 1 month of the season, we have to make sure, say, weeks 1, 2, 3, and 4, we can lose those weeks and it's not going to alter the balance of the entire league and schedule. So they're putting in contingency plans. So for those of you, and look, this year, I know when they put out the schedule, most fans, you know, rush online and they buy their flights and they buy their hotels and start making plans for trips. I don't know how you do that this year. I really don't know how you do that, because who knows? Who knows what the world will look like come September? And, you know, if you buy insurance on this stuff, sure, that's one way to do it. But it's going to be a whole different world trying to book your trips to see the Miami Dolphins play in 2020. But the schedule in and around May 9th, for those of you that look forward to that. Tom, that's all we got for today. I'll be back with a podcast tomorrow. I have another interview, knock on wood, lined up. Hopefully it happens. I don't know. As always, check out the website, DolphinsTalk.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at DolphinsTalk or at DolphinsTalkTom. If you want to reach me via email, I know a lot of you do send emails who aren't on social media. I can be reached at DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. Wherever you listen to this podcast, whether SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Podbean, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to leave us a nice 5-star rating and a comment, it's always appreciated. That's all we got for today. Everyone, have a great Wednesday, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.